Commence primary ignition.
Oh, brilliant. Let's get going.
All right, welcome Star Wars fans to Jawa Jabber episode number 4. My name is Dennis, the Phantom Menace, and I'm joined by my best friend and co-host, David Wren.
Hey everybody, what's going on?
We are just chilling at home and wanting to talk about this next episode because I think we've seen it last week and now we finally got a chance to sit down and talk about it.
Yes.
And the first thing I wanted to mention, or at least talk about, is just the beginning. And I think that's always a fun thing for every single person who's seen Star Wars The Clone Wars since it first came out. And that's the kind of the quote at the very beginning of the episode. It's something that George Lucas, I think, affectionately called a fortune cookie. And it's a nice little moral and a nice little quote that kind of sets up the episode. So what is that one for episode number 2 of this season?
So the opening fortune cookie for this episode is "The search for truth begins with belief." And I usually really enjoy these fortune cookie openings of the episodes, sometimes more than the episode itself. That is all I will say, particularly in like the first season, maybe. But this one, I feel like this quote really spoke to Rex's journey through this episode because he just knew that Echo was alive. Like, he didn't think it. He didn't wish it. There was something inside of him that knew that Echo was alive. And his whole driving story arc so far through these first two episodes has been finding Echo.
Mm-hmm. The first thing that stands out to me at the beginning of this episode, and we've mentioned it many times before in our preview to this season, as well as our last episode, is the animation. And I love that at the very beginning of this episode, there was the smoke and the mist where we're flying in almost on another ship right behind one of the Republic gunships. And it's almost like we're on it or we have a camera attached to one and it's flying into the base on an axis. And the animation is just insane. It looks so real that I feel like I'm actually watching a movie and I have to tell myself this is an animated show. Like, I think it's that good where I get lost in it, and especially with the music being on another level for this season, I think, even better than it used to be.
I'm not disagreeing because I believe the animation is much better. I mean, all right, it's a fact. It's no belief. It's the truth. It's truth begins with belief. So, all right, it all
well, there you go.
Together.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. Theme done. Episode done. Now, cut, print, move to Broadway. So, or I guess move to podcasts?
Sure.
Move to Anchor. Do your own podcast on Anchor. There's our plug. Okay. we just did that. I feel like the genie from Aladdin right now. Like, I'm having all these different personalities hop through my brain. So what were we even talking about?
We were talking about the animation of these episodes.
Okay, so you're not wrong. The animation is much better, and I agree that it kind of draws you in. The only thing I disagree on you with is that it still, to me, looks like animation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm making it sound bigger and better than it actually may be, but it's just something that...
See, I kind of think, I agree with that. I think you kind of are, but...
I think I'm making it more than it is, but it's just because I'm so excited of how it looks now compared to what it looked like years ago.
Well, it does, and especially on the HD streaming or whatever you want to call it, you know? Like, it does. It looks gorgeous. And, you know, we go back to season one, which, like I've said, one of the first things that turned me off on this show is the animation. I mean, it's leaps and bounds. It's better. Like, one thing that I noticed with the animation in this, and I have it in my notes, was Anakin's hair.
Yes, Anakin's hair.
The movement of Anakin's hair. It's something that I noticed, and it's one of those things. I was watching a behind the scenes of, it was either episode 2 or episode 3, and this was recently I was watching it, and they were talking about animating digital Yoda, and how one of the things they were very insistent upon, and this was George Lucas, was insistent upon was making sure he looked real. Like he wanted to look like the puppet, but do things that he could only do with computer animation. And again, this was 2002 was Attack of the Clones and 2005 was Revenge of the Sith. I personally believe it was leaps and bounds better in Revenge of the Sith. The change from Attack of the Clones to Revenge of the Sith is remarkable. Even on Blu-ray, like, it's just leaps and bounds. I don't understand it. It's like the movie was made 20 years later, but it wasn't. It was just made 3 years later. So I still really don't understand a lot of that. But anyway, one of the things that stuck out to me with that documentary was about George Lucas insisting on Yoda's hair and how, like, when his hand goes through the back of his head, the movements of every little hair on Yoda's head. And the one thing that they said, and it was the visual effects person that said it, I believe, not George Lucas, was like, now, a smart audience or whatever, like the whole thing, like you're not supposed to notice that kind of stuff, I guess. And that makes it more real. Like people like us who are going to watch it 80 million times and analyze it and whatever, of course, we're going to notice that kind of stuff because that's what we do. And that's why we have these podcasts. But like, I don't know why, for some reason, I just kept writing down Anakin's hair and it was just the way it was moving. And it didn't do that in the early seasons.
No.
It may not have even done that in season 5 or 4. You know what I mean? Like, but it just shows how much better the animation has gotten because as he's walking with Rex and the Bad Batch, like his hair is moving and it's a stupid little detail, but it's something that I noticed on my first viewing, not even my second viewing. Like it's something I noticed right away and it drew me into the story. So
yeah, I'd have to agree. It's a dramatic difference, like you said, from previous episodes.
Yes. Like, and even like I said, now I could be wrong, but like even like season 5, I don't think his hair moved like that. Like, I think it was still kind of what, for lack of a better word, blocky, some people call it, you know what I mean? Like that style of animation, like it can come up, like definitely in season 1, I would describe it like that.
Yeah.
And them walking and everything, like everything was blocky back then.
Yeah, Anakin has the full lush Skywalker hair going on in this one.
It's the best hair ever.
I love it. It's something that I don't think it's a stupid thing. I think it's really, you're looking at details that you mentioned most audiences may not be paying attention to. But then again, there are some people that are animation or majors that are looking at these things and they're recognizing it and appreciating as much as we are.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely agree with that. And even my sister, who's watching it on Disney Plus with my account, she noticed the same exact thing.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So the next thing that I wanted to mention is that there's a difference, and I don't know, there's a big difference, and I may say it a couple times in this episode, but there's a big difference between what we see in this episode and what was in the unfinished story reel that was released years ago.
Yes, and you have to speak to that because this one I did not watch at all, the unfinished story reel. I remember some of the Bad Batch one. Mm-hmm. But I don't recall ever watching this one, so.
Okay, so the part here, I mean, there's a couple things that are different, but the major difference, and we'll go into this in a little bit more detail later on in the episode, but the major difference is that the ship that the Bad Batch has is called the Havoc Marauder. That's the name of the ship. And on the front of it, in the original animation where it wasn't completely finished yet, there was a massive artwork or a decal, if you will, on the front of Padme.
Yes. Okay. I remember. I think I saw a Facebook post about this or something.
Yes. And it says actually in Orabesh on it right near her, it says good to be bad or fun to be bad, which goes with the Bad Batch's theme.
Okay.
But the reason I think that it was cut, and I'm totally okay with it being cut, because it was like a very skimpy looking art of Padme, and like her dress was way high up on her hip, and it was a funny scene though. I have to say, it was very funny to listen to the interaction between Anakin and Rex, because Rex is looking up at this thing right before they get on the ship, and Anakin's looking at it, and he's like, what is this? And then one of the Bad Batches, which one of the clones said it, but he says something to the effect of, oh yeah, we always watch her on the holocall, and something like to the effect where Anakin, you can tell, like, even in the unfinished version, you can tell that he's not liking it, and he tells Rex that's not staying up there. So even before what we're going to get into, Rex knows there's something going on with Anakin and Padme, and he's like, he didn't like that they had this artwork of her on their ship. And I thought it was really funny, but I totally understand why they changed that. And what they replaced it with was Anakin and Padme having that scene in the bunker, which you'll go into.
Which I would not trade for anything.
Yes, me neither.
It was, what, 3 minutes into the episode and I was already crying.
Yeah, so they cut that whole scene that they were going to finish and replaced it with the holo call between Anakin and Padme, which I'm, like I said, completely fine with and would rather have. But I thought it was funny that they changed it. And it was something that if you hadn't seen the unfinished story reel, you would have no idea they changed it.
Which I did not until I saw that Facebook post. But now I'm thinking, now that you were telling me the dialogue, see, I didn't see it, so I'm not sure. I would think that Tech is the one that said that about watching it on the HoloNet or whatever.
No, I think it was more Brash. I think it could have been Wrecker or Hunter.
Well, I'm going to go with Tech.
Okay.
Because he's nerdy, and, you know, of course he's going to be locked in his room watching a holo transmission of Padme.
Well, apparently they were watching it together, so.
Oh.
I don't know what that says, but.
Well, that's a whole nother TV show. That's not the Clone Wars.
I know why Dave cut it, and there are multiple reasons probably, but I'm not sad that it's gone. I just thought it was a funny thing. And I think in prior interviews, or it might have been on a stage at some Comic-Con or something in the past, they mentioned that, or they asked Dave about it, and his explanation as to why it was on there was because it was supposed to be reminiscent of World War II airplanes and where they used to have drawings or paintings of women on it. And it was a throwback to that kind of artwork where you used to see that on some airplanes.
Well, yeah, because that's what happened.
The artwork that's on the front of the nose of airplanes back in World War II was something that was an inspiration to Dave to put on one of the ships of the clones. And I think he could have maybe done it more tastefully. And I think that's why he completely scrapped it this time.
Right.
But it was set up. It was set up in a way that he wasn't doing it because he's a guy and he likes to see that kind of stuff. He was doing it to set up the scene where it was supposed to be funny.
Well, exactly. And do you remember the Doug Chang panel from Star Wars Celebration? Remember he was talking about one of the things when they were designing for Episode One, they wanted the prequel era to kind of, wasn't it World War II? Like to look more like World War II or something, whereas the original trilogy was more like World War One.
Something like that.
He said something along those lines. And if Doug, if you're listening, I'm sorry for mashing up your masterful words. But I know he said something along those lines, like where it was definitely like a style shift in the prequel trilogy. So that would, if it was World War II, you know, that would be right in game with that kind of thing.
Yeah. And so it's just one of those things that nobody, like we mentioned, would notice unless you saw the unfinished story reel. But let's get moving and past that. Instead of that, so in place of that being a funny part before they head off to Skakel Minor, they have an interaction with Hunter, one of the Bad Batch, and then he thinks it's going to be a trap, but he says he's going to go sit on the ship because of the lines that they have between each other. And by they, I mean Rex and Anakin. So I'm just going to read them really quickly because I thought they were really funny. Anakin says, first, we have that thing to do. And then Rex says, what thing? And then Anakin says, you know. And Rex gives him this look and he says, we don't have time for that, sir. And Anakin kind of turns and faces him and says, yes, we do. And I just love that part. And he says, come on, Rex, I'm late as it is. So Rex knows what's going on, but he's essentially just like, I don't really want to have to do this, but because you're my best friend and you're my, you know, you're the Jedi in charge of this and we're all together in this, I'll do it for you. I love that part.
Oh, yeah, it was great. I think it showed Rex and Anakin's kind of little bro thing going, you know, because mm-hmm. they're very close. And, you know, it's going to be sad later when he's Vader, but that's another episode. And yeah, it just showed that, again, what I said earlier, how the cost of war, like he is away from his wife for weeks at a time. Mm-hmm. And sure, it's a secret wife, but he's still away from his wife, you mm-hmm. know.
So actually going into that, I think it's clear, or at least they're making it a very big implication that Rex knows about Anakin and Padme.
Yes.
And that's also part of what this scene sets up, and that he stands guard at the front door of the barracks, and then he sees Obi-Wan starting to come towards him. Uh-huh. I absolutely loved that because it was so real. Like it didn't seem like it was a script. It was like, this is something that would happen in real life. And so while Rex is standing guard, he's trying to essentially stop Obi-Wan from going inside while Anakin is having a small moment with Padme.
A small moment? It's an epic moment.
I meant small by like a touching emotional one between the two of them, something that no one else would understand.
No, because it's just them, the way it should be, forever and always.
And I like that Anakin takes Rex's helmet, and then later that ties into the plan where Rex is trying to tell Obi-Wan, hey, he's inside the barracks spot checking my gear.
Yes.
And then Obi-Wan goes, without you. And he doesn't know how to respond because he's not good at it, but he's doing it for his friend.
And you also see, I've mentioned this before, like in the movies, you didn't get a lot of time to flesh out any of the relationships, really, you know, like you were told Anakin is the Padawan, Obi-Wan's the master, they're best friends. Padme he's in love with. Oh, they fall in love. Oh, they get married. Oh, she's pregnant. Oh, he's evil. Oh, she's dead. Like, that's, you know, essentially the movies. And what the Clone Wars has done in general is really elaborate on all of the relationships in the prequel trilogy and the new ones, of course, like Ahsoka and Rex and everyone that was created just for the show. But it really has deepened Anakin and Obi-Wan and Anakin and Padme. And I think we see both of this in this episode. Because, so Anakin's talking to Padme, and the other interesting thing that I saw in this, which I didn't really get at first, like from the previous seasons, was how much alike Rex and Anakin have become. Part of Anakin's conversation with Padme is that Anakin is worried about Rex, and like if he's getting too emotionally involved in this, you know, finding Echo and all this stuff, and Padme goes, well, gee, who does he sound like? Or something like that. And, you know, it's like, it's a cute little wink. And I really liked that moment. And that made me, I don't know, it made me look at Rex in a different light for a second. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's very true. You know, and I never thought about it that way. Because I told you, I'm not really big on the clones.
Yes, I wanted to read that actual quote.
Stop it, you have it? I've been looking for it for 10 minutes.
The quote between Padme and Anakin?
Yes.
Yeah, I wrote it down while I was watching it. So Padme asks Anakin and says, there's something else. She can tell by even through a holo call or a holo chat or however you want to describe it. She can tell that there's something. What he says to her is that it's Rex. He says, I'm worried he's letting his personal feelings drive him too much on this mission. And Padme just looks at him and she says, essentially what you talked about, and you kind of paraphrase it, but she says, I wonder where he learned that. And so we know that's exactly Anakin. That's exactly what he does in every situation.
That is my homeboy to a T. Yes, it is. And I said, I loved it. It made me see Rex in a new light. And can we talk about the animation of that scene? Okay. I know I'm focusing on Anakin and Padme, and I'm sorry, but like, even in the hollow net, or whatever you call that, the holo transmission, whatever, like the animation of Padme, like the little wink and like the kind of side glance or whatever, like she gives him, it was just so realistic. Like, it's just so good. I love it.
Yeah.
It just makes me happy. And the moment, and I believe, again, I've only watched it twice, but I believe there was a little bit of Across the Stars in that music.
Correct.
Okay, I thought so. Yeah, so like that kind of ties it all together. And I mean, that whole scene just was beautiful.
We originally doing it, the Bad Batch episodes, it wasn't one of the last 12 episodes, but now it is. And so that changed the way that I had to orchestrate the story somewhat. For example, in these 12 episodes, there was not a single scene with Padme in it. And it goes without saying, she's an important part of the prequel trilogy. And while my job in Clone Wars was never really to tell her story, George did that, or Anakin's, I do have a job to tell how the other characters relate to those characters. I personally felt it was a little bit lousy that Padme didn't have a voice in the episodes, in any of the 12 episodes. friends. Also, Kat Tabor, you know, had been working on the series for a long time, and she was sad that she wasn't going to get to be a part of the show. So I wrote a scene that had Padme in it. And that scene then helps gives you context for how Anakin thinks of her, that he relies on her, that he regards her opinion very highly, that she knows him, that she knows Rex. And it became an important scene, and it alludes to certain timelines in Revenge of the Sith, because you see that to us, the audience, who know better, that she looks slightly pregnant.
Before Anakin leaves the barracks, they have that incredibly emotional and touching scene where they reach out their hands towards each other. And we know that they're not actually touching, but they know they're doing it through this holocall or whatever we call it. And I couldn't help but see that connection with Ben and Rey, or Kylo.
Yes.
In The Last Jedi. And I think it makes a very nice parallel in that Anakin and Padme have a extremely strong emotional bond, but there's an even greater bond with Rey and Kylo or Ben at that point, because they're actually touching through the Force. I just really like the symbolism there. And on top of that, I wanted to mention, and many people have brought this up, and I think it's kind of obvious that she's putting her left hand on her stomach, but I feel like Anakin is just being Anakin. And I don't mean to be stereotypical, but at this point, I don't even think he's paying attention. So I think he's just being a guy, and he has no clue that she's pregnant at that point.
He has not 1 ounce of thought that she is pregnant. No clue.
Because, and this is what we talked about in our last episode that people were griping over. There's no discontinuity here, because we do see him in Revenge of the Sith, and that's when she tells him, because he didn't know at this point. It's supposed to be for us as the audience to see.
Well, I was just going to say that. I think that is in there, and like Padme puts her arm down there just to kind of so the audience can look at it. It's not for Anakin to look at it. Mm-hmm. It's for the audience to look at it, because we do this in theater sometimes too, where you've got the whole big stage and you somehow have to draw the audience's attention to like a specific thing. So you use your hand, or you use a gesture, or you use smoke, or whatever. So like, I think that was the animation just kind of doing something very subtle, so the audience can get a clue. Oh, hey, Padme's pregnant. We're getting close to Revenge of the Sith time. It's just a way to kind of mark where it is in the timeline.
Yeah, and I think it's telling for, if you're looking at it from Anakin's perspective and not from ours, he's looking at her straight on, face to face. So
correct.
The small baby bump that we see is not visible to him as much as it is to us as the audience.
Well, and I have put this theory to the test this week, okay, at work.
Interesting. Do tell.
When I'm just interviewing pregnant people at work now. Now, so when I'm looking at someone, my eyes do not go to their stomach. Sorry about it. If I'm talking to someone, I am looking them in the eye.
How dare you?
I know, right? I'm sorry. I'm proving this theory wrong, but I'm proving our theory right. So no, I've been really trying to pay attention to where my line of sight is when I'm speaking to people. And I hate to tell you, but it's their face when I'm talking to them. I'm not looking at their arms. I'm not looking at the screaming kid in the cart. I'm not looking at their shoes, unless it's like a Star Wars pair, and then I happen to notice. And because there's a couple customers that do that, and yes, they all have cards now. But like, you know, like Anakin, you know, this is his wife. They haven't seen her in weeks. He's not looking at her stomach. He is looking at that beautiful face that he fell in love with when he was a 9-year-old boy.
And she was, what, 14?
Correct. She was 14.
Yeah. And I'll go on a little bit of a tangent here. A lot of people have an issue with that age gap. And
can we put the age gap of Anakin and Padme in the same box where we're putting the conspiracy theory?
Yes.
Skywalker.
I wanted to mention it because it's something that, yes, in The Phantom Menace, he is very young and she is also very young. But for one, she's not seeing him that way until they get much older. By the time he's a late teenager and she's in her early 20s, I think the age gap disappears in that people, even in our day and age here, which this isn't a galaxy far, far away, but even in our day and age in society, that age gap isn't as seen as this is strange. So let's say, I don't know, she's, what was that? That's four, I can't do math, 6 years, 5 years?
It's 5 years.
So if she's, let's say in the future, I know there are just a specific timeline, but let's say he's 20 and she's 25. That is nowhere near the same kind of awkwardness between a 9-year-old and a 14-year-old. Plus, we just mentioned that it's not the same connection then.
Exactly. So here's a real life example. My sister and I are 5 years apart. Okay. Mm-hmm. So am I just not, now this isn't an issue or whatever, but like, am I just not supposed to ever look at anyone that is my sister's age or younger? No. Why? That's stupid. Like you said, when your kids, yes, sure. Like, it's a little weird. And of course she has that line in Attack of the Clones. Oh, Annie, you'll always be that little boy I knew on Tatooine. Mm. Well, yeah, he was 9, but guess what? He also shot up 6 feet and, you know, he's athletic and he's a Jedi and he's attractive. So like, you know, your thoughts are going to change, Padme. Just give it a little bit of time.
Yeah, and she did actually mention that in the line, which I liked when they did the hand touch. He says, or she says, I love you, Annie. And he says, I love you too, which I love that part because it just connects everything that we know as Star Wars fans. And I thought it was just honestly, my favorite scene or one of my favorite scenes in this episode.
Oh, it's my favorite scene in the episode, hands down.
Well, I know it is yours because it's Anakin and Padme.
Well, right. But like, I feel like even if I wasn't a huge Anakin and Padme person, this would still be one of my, like, just because it's really well done. Like I said, I mean, the animation's beautiful.
So after that scene where Anakin comes out of the barracks and tosses the helmet to Rex, I love the part where Obi-Wan's essentially trying to say that the council doesn't necessarily agree with this mission you're going on. And Anakin says, don't have time for that. And it just kind of cuts him off. Mm-hmm. But then why don't you tell our listeners what happens in that moment?
Oh my God. It is my favorite Obi-Wan moment from probably the entire series. I say that 100%. I love Obi-Wan. I always have. I am looking forward to the spinoff show, but this moment right here is true bromance, true understanding, true, hey kid, I caught you, but I'm cool with it. Like, it's just a total big brother mentor moment. And I absolutely love it. And, you know, they're trying to get going and Anakin's walking away and Obi-Wan's like, I hope you told Padme I said hello. And like, Anakin just gives him a little look. And it's just that look. And again, this is the animation. This isn't even really the voice acting here, which I believe in the early years of the Clone Wars, some of the voice acting that was done far outweighed some of the animation. And now I'm not saying that the voice acting is getting worse by any stretch of the imagination, but like, the animation is just getting so good that you don't need dialogue. And that's another thing that I love that Star Wars does, when you don't need dialogue. You just get the look between Obi-Wan and Anakin, and you just know, like, you can fill in the rest in your head. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need an explanation. You don't need George Lucas to re-edit it for when he picks up Emperor Palpatine and throws him down the shaft and he goes, no, no, you know, you don't need that edit. You don't, sorry, tangent, but
McClunky.
Yes. That one was not George Lucas though. We can't blame him for that one.
That's going to be Baby Yoda's first words.
That's awesome.
It would be great.
But yeah, that look between Anakin, like that recognition. And so one of the things I was thinking about was, not that I have to justify it by any means, the look between them. It's that best friend look. It's that look where you don't have to say anything and you just know what the other one is thinking. And I have said this numerous times. I don't know if I've spoken to you about this, but I know I've talked to Sean and a bunch of my friends about it, how I have never believed that Obi-Wan had no idea about Anakin and Padme. All right. And one of my things with it, like one of my justifications for it or whatever, is Anakin's reaction when Padme falls off the ship in Attack of the Clones.
Yes, I completely agree.
You know, he's freaking out and, you know, it's that whole, you know, you are betraying your orders to the Jedi Order, blah, blah, blah. You know, like that whole thing. You know, Anakin's reaction to her falling off of the ship, it's way more than a crush, okay? Even like an insane crush that he's had for 10 years, you know? Like, it's way more than that. And like, I think that's the moment where Obi-Wan really picked up on it, because Obi-Wan and Anakin, they're brothers. And you know, they love each other, like an older brother, you know, like a whole sibling kind of thing. And even though they're not, you know, attachments are forbidden, but they're totally attached to each other. And that's why the fight at the end of this whole saga is emotional. I don't know what word I was trying to say. But he loves Anakin as a brother. And, you know, that look between him and Anakin, that's his acknowledgement. That's his, if not approval, but like, they don't have to talk about it. Like, he knows from the Clone Wars. Now, obviously, I didn't get any of this from the movies because this wasn't in the movie. But one of the other kind of full circle things I felt like in that moment was Obi-Wan's own relationship, or whatever you want to call it, with Duchess Satine of Mandalore. You know, he's not gonna be a hypocrite and kind of, you know, scold Anakin or whatever on having a relationship, because he kind of knows, well, hey, I've had this relationship with Satine and I can't say anything. But he doesn't have to say that because he loves Anakin. But I just kind of thought that was another little parallel. Like, you know, they each have their own relationship here in the show. And yeah, but I, like, other than that, I just like to think it's just more of the affection that Obi-Wan has for Anakin, where it's this like unspoken peace, or like, you know, you don't have to sneak around, I know what you're doing, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Connecting to what you mentioned, and you really had some great parallels, which I also thought of as well, is that for him to say something to Anakin about this, like you said, would be kind of hypocritical with his relationship with Satine. And I remember that in that episode, way back when, in whichever season it was, I don't remember, but he basically told Satine that he was willing to leave the Jedi Order if she just said the word. So he had such a strong romantic and emotional connection with her that to be refusing that kind of connection for Anakin and Padme would, like you said, be a bit hypocritical. But I also think there's a nice parallel, and I know you remember this, and it's there's a connection to the Revenge of the Sith, where he asks Padme if, or he doesn't ask her, he does. He says, the child's Anakin, isn't it?
He's not asking. He's letting Padme know that he knows.
Right. But what I'm saying is that he says that to her. So there's another film in that parallel with him knowing about it, because he knows. And we finally get this confirmation of, like, it seals the deal. There is no ambiguity with this episode, because it was just that moment that you just described where Anakin turns around and he looks at him and he keeps walking. And I just thought in that moment, that the Revenge of the Sith scene where he tells Padme, I'm so sorry, because of what Anakin is essentially turning to the dark side at that point, or already has. And so I liked that parallel, and I liked what you talked about with Satine. And it was just, yeah, that was a moment where I think a lot of fans were really happy about, because it made us understand that Obi-Wan isn't just a by the books, Jedi Council says this, and we will go along with it. There's actually also a bit of a connection with him and his old master, Qui-Gon Jinn, where he was always by the books. He always says, we need to consult the Jedi Council. We need to ask them about this or that. And Qui-Gon kind of helped him to understand that there are certain aspects of living as a Jedi that doesn't mean you have to be so strict that you can't go outside of, you know, like the moral code that the Jedi kind of set up, because that code eventually helped to bring their downfall. And so even in Anakin, because they attachments are forbidden, all that kind of talk where he felt conflicted in that he had these feelings, but then the Jedi Order or the Jedi Council was saying, you know, you should be kind of bearing these, and this is not part of being a Jedi. So what I'm getting at is that I completely agree with your explanation of that entire scene. And I know I keep saying, like, oh, this is my favorite scene and this is my favorite scene, but there's just so many that it's really hard to narrow down which one's my favorite, because they're all great.
Mm-hmm. I agree. But the Anakin and Padme one is the best one. Sorry. And then the Obi-Wan and Anakin. So they're the two best. They're equally best. Well, no, because I like Padme more. So
see, I'm telling you.
Not more than Obi-Wan. But
like, it's not that easy.
Yeah, no, it's not easy at all.
Obi-Wan's not dumb. He knows Anakin's in love with this woman. I don't think he ever understands that they got married. I don't think he thinks Anakin took it that far. I mean, even Obi-Wan was in love with someone. That's not abnormal. It's very normal. What you choose to do and how you choose to have a relationship, what you sacrifice, then that becomes a bigger deal when he's made an oath to the Jedi Order to be selfless, to put everyone else ahead of himself. And he never thinks the two of them would do something so drastic, but it dawns on him over time that they have.
So the next scene that we have is them getting onto the Havoc Marauder, the ship that is the Bad Batch's ship. And can I just say that I love the theme for the Bad Batch?
Mm.
The music, mm-hmm. And we'll play a little bit of it here. It just seems like something that you would listen to when you're getting pumped up and ready to go out with your bros.
Kevin Kiner, man. He's knocking it out of the park.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone in this show this season is knocking it out of the park. But yeah, the music has just been another level so far.
I heard that Kevin actually had a lot more money, I guess. I don't know. That's not the right word. He was able to use some of the funds of Lucasfilm and mm-hmm. actually composed his own music instead of kind of recycling some of John Williams in the previous seasons. And so he was able to complete this whole thing. And I think at each episode that's released, there's going to be a release of that track on Spotify or any places where they actually release the Clone Wars music. And mm-hmm. I just love the Bad Batch's theme song. I can hear it playing in my head. And it's just one of those things where it makes me remember. Like, it's going to be, from this point on, it's going to help me to remember that was, like, you know, the final season. That was season 7, because that music matches it.
Well, that's what music does. Like, you know, who hears the Imperial March and not think of Darth Vader?
Yeah. Nobody.
You know? Or, I guess, stormtroopers marching or whatever. But, like, you know, I don't know. My head immediately goes to Darth Vader.
Yeah, I think everybody does. I mean, you think that, you see the mask in your head, you hear the breathing.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So their approach to Skako Minor, their whole thing where they're going to try and see if Echo's alive and if Rex is correct. I call Skako Minor the AKA Mustard Lightning Planet with lots of wind.
That is very accurate, yes.
And complete with flying reptiles.
Yeah, they were weird.
But before we actually get to that, can I need to mention this because I thought it was hilarious. I literally laughed out loud when I saw it. When they're on the ship and they're on their way to Skako Minor, Wrecker is bench pressing a Gonk droid.
Yes, that was awesome. I also laughed out loud and I'm pretty sure I dropped my phone.
That scene was hilarious. And in the other hand, he's eating a drumstick.
I think that was when I texted you and I said, ha 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 ha. That was when I watched that.
Yeah, I just love it because it's just so his character. It's so Wrecker.
Yeah. It's
everybody else is kind of just like chilling out or getting ready to land on this planet, and Hunter's talking to Anakin, and then you just have him in the background like, and like bench pressing it. And I love that. I love the little funny moments where it's interspersed in between like the more touching moments, like with Anakin and Padme, because it just gives you that moment to have a sigh, a relief before you get to the really heavy stuff.
Yes, exactly.
So they're approaching Skako Minor and there's, you know, some turbulence because there's a lot of wind on this planet. And it's just one of those things where they've never been there before. They really don't know what they're going into necessarily, but they finally land and Tech starts to talk about the primitive locals and refers to them as they're called the Poltecs, and Tech refers to them as primitive being kind, in that because they worship these flying reptiles, he sees them as they're a little less than primitive. They're kind of like way low, like cavemen, like alien cavemen. And I'm not going to go, and we're not going to break down every single moment of that scene, but I like that it's, I don't know if Rex said it or somebody said it, and it's like, let's not just run out there. And then they just run out there. Like, they didn't listen at all. The Bad Batch is like, forget it. We're running out.
Nope, sorry, peace.
And that was after that, this flying reptile like crashes on top of their window and is like screeching. And he's like, it's one of those flying reptiles. I'm like, yes, thank you, Tech. Thank you for reminding us. That's what you just said. I love that part. And then we have one of those flying bat-like creatures. There must be an actual name to them. I just don't know it yet. And I'd like the connection here, and I don't know if you saw it, but I immediately thought of the sun in the Mortis arc when it picked up Anakin.
Okay. Yeah.
I think if I'm incorrect about this, then it's fine. But I thought that was a nice foreshadowing of Anakin's future, because he gets picked up and taken away, and he loses his lightsaber.
Oh, Obi-Wan's going to kill me.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a nice connection too, but Rex picks it up and then he's, you know, firing at whatever that creature that took him away. But he also loses that lightsaber, and he gets it back, you know, obviously during the episode, but I think it was just a nice foreshadowing in that eventually he does lose that lightsaber and Obi-Wan picks it up and then hands it to Luke, you know, years and years and years later. I saw that, and that's immediately what I thought of, because I'm like, I don't know what these creatures are, but they really remind me of the son who kind of transforms into that creature in the Mortis arc.
Yes, and I agree with that. They also kind of, I know they didn't really look like them, but for some reason the Minox came to my head also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. It's probably because of the leathery wing kind of look.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, for some reason, like I said, I know, like, you know, it's not like a clone of the Minox or anything, but I instantly thought Minox, and I thought of the, you know, when they were down inside of the space slug or whatever, mm-hmm. and like they were looking in the cave, like that kind of thing.
Kind of like a Minox on steroids and like 10 times as big.
There we go. I like it.
So while Anakin is being taken away, I love how the Bad Batch handles the situation. They're very cool, calm, and collected about it, and they feel like, yeah, we'll take care of this. And Rex is kind of looking around like, what do you mean? What's going on? You know, he wants to go after him somehow. And Tech says that he has a thermal reading on that creature, and then Crosshair says, I'll take care of it. And he shoots an attachment cable, like, over Tech's shoulder. Like, you can tell, like, they've done this stuff so much that they're, like, they're in sync with each other. So he uses Tech's shoulder as kind of like a balance for his gun or for that cable. And that wraps around the flying reptile's leg, the one that's captured Anakin. And then Hunter attaches the cable to himself. And Rex goes, what are you doing? And he says, going for a ride. And
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know why these scenes... just, I love them so much, but it takes him off and they're flying and he's trying to get to this reptile thing. And I don't know if it's just me again, but I see Hunter kind of as Obi-Wan here a little bit in a parallel, and that he's trying to get to Anakin, but he ultimately fails in that scene. And then he kind of has to detach and he rolls on this rock. But then where the flying reptile and the Poltech leader brings Anakin is really low. And so we have Hunter on the high ground when the others land. And like I said, this may just be me reading into it way too much, but I think in my own head, that's going to be a parallel. That's Obi-Wan having the high ground when he tried to get Anakin back, but failed.
I mean, yeah, that's, I didn't think of that, but yes, I agree.
And the Poltechs have this really interesting look to them. They obviously look very alien, but they have this different dialect and this different voice. And I really enjoyed when they finally got up to the village that they kind of land in, they started this, there was a convenient giant boulder there and they called it Operation Rock Slide. And I thought it was funny, but their whole thing when it comes to kind of distracting the natives to be able to get to Anakin, I thought that was kind of neat. And they had Wrecker push that boulder down and they followed behind it. But I also enjoyed Tech translating what the leader of the Poltechs was saying. And you could see it on the screen of his visor that he was wearing. I wonder if when he's speaking, it's just reversed English, because it sounds like something you'd hear if you just reversed the normal phrases on like a computer. And I haven't tried it, but maybe I should, and just write something out and then reverse it and be like, maybe this is how they made the language for the Poltechs. I'm not quite sure. But throughout all of these scenes, I love the screen wipes. I know that's a big hallmark of Star Wars, where you have the screen wipe go from left to right, or you have it kind of fade in, fade out. You sometimes have it in multiple different variations of it going from one scene to the next. And I just really enjoyed seeing that in this, because I don't think many times most people recognize it because they think it's the next scene, but it doesn't just go from one scene to the next. It has that screen wipe. And that's something that I think people really talk about when it comes to Star Wars films. And it was, at least at the time, a very brand new thing when George introduced it.
In 1977, yes, it was a new thing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But I think even by the time 1980, because see, it's, I think it's one of those things where, like, once it happens, everybody copies it. So, like, I think by the time we even got to Empire Strikes Back, there was probably 100 different movies that were using screen wipes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And by that time, no one was using them except Star Wars. Like, I'm pretty sure in one of the reviews for episode one, they were like, oh, hey, it's the return of the screen wipe, because, you know, no one had used it in 19 years or however long the time period was between Return of the Jedi and The Phantom Menace.
Mm-hmm. David, I think you just gave me a great idea for a title, Return of the Screen Wipe.
I like it. Is that the name of the episode? Is that the name of another episode of our podcast?
We could either one. I don't know. We could figure that out.
Well, don't forget about Revenge of Return of the Rise of the Sith.
Yeah, that'll be another one.
Oh, no, that's going to be the commentary episode.
Yeah, that sounds good.
That'll be the Blu-ray commentary episode.
Yes, that's perfect.
Which at this rate will be 4 hours long, even though the movie is only 2.5. But
okay, so as we finally get to where they're trying to find Echo, they're on this planet called Skako Minor that we mentioned, and the Techno Union, which is the group of individuals that are actually what Rex believes holding Echo as a prisoner, there is Wat Tambor, and of course he's aligned with the Separatist Alliance. And Wat Tambor we've seen in Revenge of the Sith, and we've seen him a couple times in some older Clone Wars episodes, but I always get a very big Frankenstein's monster vibe from him, because I'm not really quite sure what species he is, but when he's put together, it's half tech and half him, and it's just kind of a mix of the two. And when we finally see him in this scene, he's talking to Admiral Trench, and there is a kind of that whole room where they're talking is very, again, Frankenstein vibes, because there's electrical nodes and there's this big stasis chamber. And like I said, Wat Tambor being half techno, half whatever his species is, he's got green skin. So I think there's some inspiration there that they pulled from that. But I really enjoyed that we got to see a different kind of probe droid before it kind of zooms in where they are. And you can hear the probe droid's noise as it's flying around, but it looks different because, of course, it's not the Empire yet. And it's not what we see in The Empire Strikes Back. It's a probe droid that the Techno Union has that is just a different variety. But because this all kind of stems from where they began, there's a connection there. And I like that buzzing, humming noise. And it's just one of those hallmarks that makes me think of The Empire Strikes Back. But anyway, I also wanted to mention that Admiral Trench it's really interesting that they decided to use him as a spider, because not only is that really creepy and the noise that he makes when he's talking, that kind of clicking noise, he's a spider, and symbolically he lays a trap for any of the individuals that he encounters during this clone war. And so in this case, it would be the Republic clones. And he's laying a trap kind of like a spider lays a web. And so I just thought that the character there was just really spot on. He's creepy. He's menacing. He's got these eyes. And then, of course, he's like half robot now because of when we saw his ship get blown up, like in the first episode that they had us watch of the Clone Wars in season one. I just really, really enjoy his character. And I don't know why. I just think it's really cool. I would love to have like a Black Series action figure of him at some point, but maybe that'll happen in the future. And when he's talking to Wat Tambor, there's that little connection to the Phantom Menace where there's the sound and the ripple effect of the transmission through the, what I like to call holo Skype. And that's the same thing with Queen Amidala and the Trade Federation. I like that they made that connection between what's happening here and what happened in The Phantom Menace, so that we kind of get, oh, I remember this sound and I'll remember this kind of effect. And just those little details is, I think, what makes this show and anything related to it just so much sweeter than just being an animated show.
Lucy is a listening to Jawa Jabber. It's a muy, muy bombad show. Misa thinks so. You should stay here, okay? Woo, cobra fish.
So we meet up again, and the scene goes to the Bad Batch has actually had some help from the locals, because they told them that, hey, we're here because the Separatists are here. We're not trying to bring our war to your planet. We want to just pick up someone that we think they've imprisoned or that they have. And they said that we'll get out of here. And so the main leader of the Poltex of this alien race says, we'll help you get there, but that's as far as we're going to go. So we actually meet up with them again, climbing this cliff, and we have the Bad Batch, and we have Rex, and we have Anakin. and they're climbing this cliff and they overlook where they're supposed to be going, where we just saw where they're headquartered with the Techno Union. And I really enjoyed that they had another scuffle between Rex and between the Bad Batch. And so they have their own way of doing things. And they kind of think maybe Rex is falling into a trap. And that's what it seems like to us. But Rex is adamant that no, he knows that was Echo. He doesn't think it. He knows. And so he doesn't really quite understand how the signal is being broadcast, but he wants to go help his fallen brother, or who he thought was already gone. And I enjoyed that Wrecker was saying, you know, I'm not scared of nothing. You know, when I'm up real high, I got a problem with gravity. And I just thought that was a funny way to describe how if somebody's scared of heights, but they don't want to quite say it, it's something that you see a bit of a weakness, a bit of a flaw with Wrecker. Tech also mentions in this scene that Echo is the Echo's signal is going in and out and it's not steady. So Tech originally thinks it could be a latency issue with the frequencies caused by some atmospheric disturbances on this planet. We mentioned that there's some dust storms and it's kind of a hectic place with lightning. But so we see a lot more of that later on. But when they actually get to that location, I like that they have different droids. They don't have the B1 battle droids. They have D battle droids. I don't know what the number, I think it might be D1 battle droids. But they're different in that they look different. They have an extra set of arms, and it's not reminiscent necessarily of the Geonosians who built the B1 battle droids. It's what the Techno Union made. So even though they sound very similar and they act very similar, they're different. And I think they were made just for this arc that we have with the Bad Batch, especially made for this. And we never see them again, as far as I know, unless they plan on using them again in the future at some point, which I wouldn't put it past them, but just an interesting thing. It's really interesting that Rex really would try to pick a fight with Wrecker. Like, it's just his character. That's just the type of badass Rex is.
It is. And he's shown that on numerous, like, he never backs down from a fight. He never, you know, he always gives it 110%. That's why he's Rex.
Exactly. And I kind of thought it was a bit of awkward phrasing. It's strange to me that they may have done this on purpose. And I know, whatever, it's a small thing. But then, you know, Wrecker kind of picks him up a little bit and says, why don't you pick on someone not your size?
Yeah, that was a little weird.
Which to me, I'm like, wouldn't it make sense to say, why don't you pick on someone your own size? I don't know. It just seems like it flows better, but maybe they did that on purpose. And then Rex says, you'll be a whole lot smaller when I'm through with you.
That was great. I wanted Rex to like take Anakin's lightsaber and like chop his leg off or something.
I'm glad that they didn't. Though. Awesome.
No, that would have been epic.
And I mentioned earlier that Wrecker has a fear of heights, but he doesn't quite say it.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, he says, I have a problem with gravity.
It's because he's so big.
Yes, exactly.
I love it. Yeah, it's that made me laugh. I like, I know I said earlier that Tech is my favorite. Mm-hmm. I think Wrecker is now. After this episode, I'm pretty sure it's Wrecker.
You see, because I went from liking Wrecker like as my second, and I like Hunter even more now. I don't know why. I do. I like that he is able to take the different personalities of this Bad Batch, and he's able to bring them together to do something and accomplish something that none of them alone could do on their own. He's kind of like the glue that holds them together.
That's the Rambo one, right?
Yes, that's Hunter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I thought so. I also call him in my headcanon Duke Kaboom from Toy Story 4.
You're going to kill me, but I have not seen Toy Story 4.
That's not why I'm going to kill you, but okay.
Is it because I found that quote?
That's one reason.
Anakin and Padme.
Uh-huh.
So when they finally get to the tower that they're trying to see if Echo's signal is being broadcast from there, Tech's new theory, which originally was that it might be atmospheric disturbances, is that it's only traceable during data transmissions.
Which makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'm sure, I mean, David, I know you loved that we got to see Anakin a whole lot more and using his lightsaber, although briefly.
Yes, I did. I hate to keep saying this, but it draws me in to the story more because it's a character that I like. So, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying I don't like Rex or anybody, but the fact that Anakin was in it a little more kind of made me pay more attention to this episode.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I just wanted to mention again, and I know we're like beating a dead horse with a stick here, but the movement of the animation and the sounds of the lightsaber.
Yes.
They were so on point. They were very good.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he moves it and he's fighting those battle droids, I think they're called D1 battle droids or something like that effect. They're a different kind, as we mentioned, but it's just the way he just, the movement of the lightsaber and then the sound and the hum that goes with it. It didn't have that before in previous episodes. It wasn't quite as sensitive.
Okay. See, that's something I didn't really notice. Like it sounded really good today or during this episode.
Yeah. You need to watch it again. Cause it's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's a very small scene where he's actually using his lightsaber, but it's just right. Every single move he makes, like they translated it perfectly to where it was. Because what the lightsabers that I have, and if certain ones from certain companies have much better quality when it comes to sensing the movement. And so when you move something and it doesn't make the noise, it kind of pulls you out of the moment.
Well, that's why you have actors like Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen who just make the sound for you on set.
Yeah, I heard a lot about that.
Oh my God, it's so funny because George Lucas was like, guys, you don't have to do this. Like, we put the sound in later. And Hayden's like laughing and he's like, I'm sorry, I've been doing it since I was a kid. Like, it's just what I do.
Well, I think it actually made George a little mad too, because they couldn't use
it. Yeah, exactly. Because, like, you know, George Lucas was saying, like, you know, well, you know, when we first start filming, it's great, but, like, you know, it's funny, whatever. But, like, you know, when you're on day 85 and you're still doing it, it's like, come on, guys. Like,
George is there going, I need more chocolate.
Mm-hmm. Well, wasn't Laura Dern doing like pew pew during The Last Jedi or something?
And yeah, you can see it. Yeah.
Oh, you can actually see it.
I didn't see her mouth mouth the words pew pew.
That's hilarious.
Which is hilarious. Yes. And I think there's people that have made, of course they have, but they've made shirts that say pew pew. And so, like I said, the lightsaber sounds were really good. I recommend anybody to go watch that scene again. I'm sure very soon it's going to be on YouTube, so you can watch it over and over. And so they finally get to this room where they believe this signal is being transmitted. And Wat Tambor shows up on that screen and says, I'm going to just paraphrase because there's a lot that's said between him and Rex, but they have the whole battle with multiple droids. And so can I just take a second here and say that for them being droids and the crap that stormtroopers get for not being able to shoot and hit their target, these are robots. They should be able to hit every target, and yet they don't hit anyone, not even once in this scene. Not once. And there's like 100 at least of them, and you have 4 from the Bad Batch and Anakin, and I don't know, Anakin does a great job because he uses the Force to like take out a third of them, but that was
so cool.
Yes, it was very cool, but it just reminded me, like, okay, everyone's always like, oh, stormtroopers can't shoot and hit their target. I'm like, what about robots? They can't do it either. Like, and you'd think they would have better accuracy.
Well, no, because they were the early stormtrooper.
That's true, I guess that's true. But so then they have Wat Tambor and Rex have this exchange, and it's a heated one. And then Wat Tambor goes, I don't know what you mean by prisoner. And he said, your friend is dead and his mind is ours. And that pretty much sets Rex off even more. And I completely understand, because this is one of his brothers, and he's essentially confirmed that, yeah, they have Echo in there and in some way.
Now, see, that's where I was like, are they gonna do like a Palpatine kind of thing? Like a clone of a clone of a clone or something? You know, like, was it gonna be some, or like, was it gonna just be his brain, like, attached? Like, remember Ninja Turtles, like Krang?
Mm-hmm.
Like, was just a brain? Like, was it gonna be like something like that? And then I was pleasantly surprised that it was him and he was still alive.
Yeah, so they get to it, and Rex is looking at this whole setup. And as I mentioned before, when you kind of took a step out, that it's very, the whole room is very Frankenstein vibe.
Yeah, totally.
With like the purple lightning in there on those rods and the conductors and everything. I thought that was really an interesting inspiration. I'm sure that Dave got out of that. And then, of course, you know, Wat Tambor, he's half techno, half not. He's green skin. It's very Frankenstein's monster. And I just, this part, of course, was maybe not as emotional for others as it was for me or for people who thought, oh my gosh, we'll finally get to see Echo. But like just knowing the fact that he was reliving the last thing that he remembers back at the Citadel in season 3, where he was mouthing the words, he was kind of in a daze, but his eyes were kind of shaking. And so when he was connected to this machine, then they got him out of this stasis chamber is what they called it. I think you mentioned, what was that thing called? And they get him out of this. And it was heartbreaking to know that for however long he's been there and for however long they thought he was gone and dead, he's been reliving that moment and they've been replaying it and then replaying it and replaying. And it's just like, what a, like a, you know, mind, you know, like it's just, it's insane to me because it, and it's sad because his name is Echo and it's literally echoing the last thing that he remembers and broadcasting this and using his mind against his will. It just, it made my jaw drop when I knew he was going to be in there, but the way that they did it was just really well done.
I didn't realize he was going to be, like I said, I was kind of thinking when Wat Tambor said, you know, we have your friend or what did he say?
He said, your friend is dead, his mind is ours.
That's what it was. Yeah, like I said, my brain immediately went to Ninja Turtles Krang. Like, they have his brain. Mm. And then, yeah, just to see his body there and, yeah, how he was, like, repeating it. I got choked up and, like, shocked. And we've mentioned this 100 times in the past hour. Like, the clone stories are not my favorite of this series, but it definitely got me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not a huge fan. It also, it made me want to go back and watch the Citadel episode.
Yes. Yes, it did.
Which I haven't had the time yet because, you know, life finds a way to get in the way, but it makes me want to go back because there's this thing, and I guess it counts for movies too, but specifically with soap operas. Okay. Where actors leave the show all the time and then like the writers kill the characters off. And then a year or two later, the actor wants to come back because the grass wasn't greener and they want to come back to where they were getting a paycheck and yada, yada, yada. So they make up some cockamamie story about, you know, how they faked their death and, you know, the doctor was evil that signed the death certificate and he wasn't really dead and whatever. So there's this thing with soap operas where if you don't see the body, that they're not really dead. Mm. And they've gotten better in more recent years with not showing the body or like a funeral or anything. Like they just like the person disappears and then, you know, one day they can reappear. But like the reason I want to go back to this, like, did we see Echo's body? Like, did we see what happened to Echo?
No. So I'll just kind of make a quick summary for our listeners too, since if you don't have a chance to go watch that previous episode, it was an episode that we actually get introduced to Tarkin. Mm-hmm. In the Clone Wars. So yeah. At that point, he's serving the Republic and he's still very much like Tarkin. It doesn't change his character at all.
No.
But Tarkin has half of the information that they need to escape, as well as another Jedi. The name escapes me. It may come back to me later. But so essentially they're trying to escape and Echo goes in to try and protect his brothers and he essentially gets blown away. And all we see that's left of him is his helmet. And it's kind of smoking, like it's supposedly say that he's dead. And that's what we assumed. But we assume a lot of things, and we see that characters pop up back again later on, like Darth Maul, or in this case, Palpatine.
Also, interesting side note that the Citadel is also a military college of South Carolina.
I wonder if that had anything to do with him.
I highly doubt it.
Yeah, me too.
But I typed in the Citadel, and for once, it didn't come up with a Star Wars reference. It came up with a military college in South Carolina. So I have to be more specific with my Google search. They were attempting to free a captive Jedi general called Evan Peel.
Evan Peel. See, I thought that's what it was, but I kept thinking Key and Peel.
Evenpiell.
Which Key and Peel is just a funny sketch comedy on YouTube, which is very different, but... But anyway, so yeah, that's what happens then. So we don't see the body, like you mentioned. Like, we don't necessarily know.
Okay, so you don't see the body. All right.
No, you just see the helmet, and that's it.
Well, then he is allowed to come back by soap opera rules. That's fine.
And David does a good job doing that. In fact, the whole thing with Maul coming back was something that George was initially quite against. And he had to convince, Dave had to convince George that we can make this work. And they did.
I didn't know George Lucas was against it.
Yeah, he wasn't really on board with it.
He was in on all of those stories.
He was, but that initial idea was Dave's.
Well, that I believe, yeah, because... That 100% I believe, yeah, sure. That makes sense.
You want a cup of Jawa juice?
I think for Rex, you have to think about it. He has all these brothers. They're all individuals, but they're all very similar. He's lost so many people over the course of this war. So I think the idea, the notion that Echo could be alive is a very powerful thing for Rex. And he would want to do something. If there's any chance he was alive, he would do something. We added that scene in the beginning, which shows him looking at Heavy and Fives and all the kind of more significant named clones that people know that he lost. So again, it helps give you context for why is this so important? Well, it's a friend of his. And what don't you do for friends? Of course.
So finishing up with that scene, because it hit me like right in the feels, and it's like, oh my gosh, Echo's been here this whole time and he's being used for the separatists, you know, and planning out the strategies and how to counter them against the Republic. That when honestly, I never really cared about Wat Tambor, but towards the end of Revenge of the Sith, where we see Anakin destroy Wat Tambor. I mean, we don't see it, but we know he screwed him up pretty bad in that scene.
Oh, that's my favorite scene.
I'm just like, I don't care for him at all. I think he deserves everything he got, meaning Wat Tambor.
Well, so did Newt Gunray.
Well, yeah, but I mean, we didn't see Newt Gunray capture a clone and then torture him and use his mind for whatever they wanted. So it just made it more...
No, but he wanted to shoot Padme.
Shoot her or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, well, if that happens to Wat Tambor, now that we know what he did, I'm totally cool with it. So that was obviously a very emotional moment for Rex. And Echo recognizes that Rex is there and he says, you came back for me. And Rex says, yes, yes, I did. It's okay, Echo. You're safe now.
That got me. That was like the you came back for me. And
just sit tight, trooper. You're going home. And that's when it ends. And, you know.
Yeah. And that's when I texted you, no, that can't be it.
Yeah, they got to give you that cliffhanger for next episode.
A really wonderful element of the Bad Batch story is Rex reconnecting with Echo. It's always very emotional to me to bring back a clone who I thought was dead and we would never see again. It's beautiful to see him revived.
When we brought back Echo, I thought it was really almost like we wanted to do almost like horror monster movie was kind of the idea. This was like a horrifying moment of this clone who's been trapped in this machine. So we really wanted to make sure we got that and like the cord still hanging to him and he comes out. We had like his eyes, they go like back and forth super quick, like he's still sort of processing stuff in his head, but he's not really there. For his body, when Rex takes him down, we just wanted him to feel limp. Basically, he hadn't used any of his muscles in however God knows long.
I knew exactly what we're gonna do when Echo falls out of that chamber. There was no surprises to the lighting team. Everybody knew it was coming. We really wanted that cold light. We wanted those moments to let you feel like it's a sinister place. It couldn't just be like your typical Imperial torture room with some droid. Like, this really needed to feel like an apparatus. It felt like some sick and twisted, demented person's playroom. Like, that whole room is set up just for Echo.
So that will about wrap up our thoughts on this episode 4 of Jawa Jabber, right?
Yes.
We're on a new hope.
So
yes. We're on episode 4 of Jawa Jabber. That will be our thoughts on the second episode of the season 7 Clone Wars. It's very confusing with these numbers. I'm even getting confused. But anyway.
I know, right?
So our next episode is going to be on episode 3 of the Clone Wars. So it's going to...
Ooh, Revenge of the Sith.
It's going to be a little... crazy when it comes to the numbers. So just read the title if you want to make sure you're listening to the correct episode that we're talking about. So maybe if you haven't seen that yet, you can put a hiatus on that until you've seen the show or seen the episode, and then you can come listen to us if you want to hear us. So you can follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. If you have trouble finding our handle anywhere, you can just type in Jawa Jabber and you'll be able to find us. If you have any questions or any kind of trouble doing that, you can always send us an email at dmdp@jawajabber.com. That, of course, is our initials put together, if you didn't know that. And is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Not on this episode of the podcast.
So thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode and for all our tangents that we go on. We love you for listening.
Tangents?
Yes.
What are tangents? We don't do tangents.
Okay, so until next time, I'm Dennis.
And I'm David.
And may the Force be with you.
Always.
Jabber, a Star Wars podcast, is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. All names, sounds, and all Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and the respective trademark and copyright holders, unless otherwise indicated. Jawa Jabber, broadcasting exclusively on Utini Radio.
Take quite a while to evacuate the T-47s.
Could you, Zwanky? Might be cousin.